What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to episode 132 of Star Wars Beneath Twin Suns, a massive breakdown podcast. We are coming to you late on a Sunday evening, excited to talk about both our experiences at SpaceCon and also a new Skeleton Crew trailer. And also, we're going to do the first part of the season two finale for our chronological watch through. So, unfortunately, I'm feeling the tiniest bit under the weather, and it is already kind of late, so I don't think we're going to have time to do a full two-hour-long episode, which is what it would take if we were to discuss all three episodes from this Boba Fett arc. But we can at least start off with Death Trap, which is the first episode in the arc, and talk about that one, and then save the other two for next week. So excited to jump into that, but first let's get the introductions out of the way. As always, I'm your host, Mercleus, joined tonight by Kit Kutcher. How are you doing this evening, Kit?
Merc, I'm doing pretty well, better than you, it sounds like. I have been resting and relaxing since our journey to SpaceCon last week, and it's been paying off. So, yeah, feeling. I was feeling pretty rough last week, but I am I'm fully recovered at this point. Ready to talk some Star Wars, and I hope you feel better soon, my friend.
Yeah, just I don't know, came down with something, just not too bad, but been resting most of the day and trying not to exert myself because obviously I got to go back and start working again tomorrow, and I have a bachelor party that I'm going to this weekend, so I really really want to be in good spirits for that. So I'm hoping that the medley of medicine that my wife produced for me, along with a good night's sleep, will be enough to get me over the hump, so to speak. But yeah, we had a pretty special week last week. We obviously went to SpaceCon in San Antonio, and that was quite an incredible experience. It turns out it was not a farce. It was not a fraud. All the people there were very real. We actually did get to, you know, shake hands with Hayden Christensen and Rosario Dawson, and that was pretty amazing. And yeah, got to listen to Ewan McGregor and Katie Sackhoff and Giancarlo Esposito and, you know, almost the entire cast of Strange New Worlds, which was really amazing. Just a ton of great panels, some really fun vendors. It was a little bit, I was actually somewhat surprised that the vendor floor was a little smaller than I was expecting it to be for, like, the caliber of guests that they had at this place.
Yeah, you know, I wonder if it's, you know, this being kind of a new event. As far as I know, this has not happened in San Antonio before. So I wonder if maybe it kind of being a new event for the area drew a slightly smaller crowd, but the star power on hand more than made up for it. And I suspect if they come back, they're probably going to draw a much larger crowd, not just of folks there to do the meet and greets and the autographs and the photo ops, but also to explore the vendor space and probably a lot more vendors to fill it up.
Yeah. Well, that being said, there were still a number of vendors there, a bunch of different lightsaber vendors, which was really interesting looking at all the build your own lightsaber type people and how there's dueling lightsabers and show lightsabers and display sabers and like all this different stuff. And you know, I obviously made a purchase. I was looking, we walked all the way around the show floor and nothing had quite caught my eye. You know, when I go to a show like this and when I buy something, it's always because there's something that just jumps out to me. I'm not looking to buy something just to buy something, but there's almost always something that calls my name. And in this case, it ended up being an old Star Wars Micro Machine set from the 90s, which called to me because I actually had the exact set when I was a kid. And it brought back a flood of memories. I probably haven't thought about Micro Machines for 25 years. and so to be hit with that nostalgia again, it was, you know, $90 well spent for a couple of those Micro Machine sets. And I got them. You probably can't see them now, but they're behind me, you know, along with the other giant wall of Star Wars memorabilia.
I do see them, actually.
And I found my wife actually found it. She just browses Facebook Marketplace because she thinks it's pretty funny. But the 1992 VHS set of the Star Wars trilogy came up for sale locally in the area, just $10 for the box set. So
oh, wow.
I'm hoping to be able to grab those in the next couple of days as well. But my office is too small, man. I'm just continually adding more and more stuff to my collection, and I don't really have the room for it. But
yeah, you know, and I also came away with a bit of a keepsake, which is currently mounted on my daughter's wall. I've already shared some photos for the folks in the Discord to see, but we did. We picked up a displate, which is like a metal poster from with like a scene from Ahsoka, the duel between Anakin and Ahsoka in The World Between Worlds, and picked that one up because I knew for sure that we were going to get Hayden's signature, and I decided to make it a doubleheader and get Rosario's as well. And man, that thing is, it's a gorgeous piece of art. The autographs look great on it. And yeah, that's going to be a showpiece, I think, for many, many, many years to come. Really, really happy with how that turned out. And then, of course, you know, had to get my daughter her first battle-ready lightsaber so she can run around whacking things and not break it. But she's a bit of a martial artist as well, so she's really enjoying having it. Already coming up with lightsaber combos, so I don't know, there may be some cosplay lightsaber videos in her future. But regardless, it's super fun and looks amazing in the dark. She actually, I joked about this happening, but then I didn't think she heard me. So I was walking upstairs the next day, like carrying a basket of laundry, and all the lights were off because it was late. And like just out of the corner of my eye, off in like a darkened doorway off of our hallway, all of a sudden a red lightsaber ignites. I'm going to be honest, I jumped. I was not expecting that. So lots of good came out of this. Vader jump scared me, and you know, all in all, it was a good time. It was a bonding experience. You got to meet my family for the first time, which was pretty cool. We've spent years and years hanging out online, talking about Destiny and Star Wars and all kinds of things, but yeah, that's never happened before. So I thought that was cool. I'm glad you came.
I was also glad that I got to spend some time out there with your wife and daughter. And you know, number one, your daughter, I would say, is an excellent Jedi, except for the amount of times that I saw that lightsaber flip to red from blue. left me slightly concerned that maybe Jedi wasn't exactly in her future.
You know, Hayden said not to worry, so I'm going to take him at his word. He would know.
Yeah, he said it's totally normal. He said happens to all of us. Yeah. I think is what he said. So, yeah, we had the experience of getting to meet Rosario and Hayden was really just incredible. Number one, it's you obviously, you know, you purchase like an autograph signing with them, and then you wait in line, and they just run you through like it's a conveyor belt, right? Like they're trying to get people in and out.
So well organized. It's a well-oiled machine for the most part.
Yeah, and so you don't have a ton of time to say anything to these people. And in fairness, half the people there don't actually seem to care about saying anything to them. Like it's definitely a solid mix of like 50% actual fans and 50% like just memorabilia dealers who are trying to get signatures on things so that they can sell them. Which right. Kind of, you know, to each their own, but it kind of leaves like a weird taste in my mouth. And I can't imagine that the people who are signing this stuff are like super enamored with the idea that like these people right. Are just monetizing their signature. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. But, you know, so I felt like we took the best advantage that we could of having just the briefest amount of time to speak to these people. And, you know, Rosario seemed to love your daughter and went above and beyond and wrote, you know, like a nice little note, wrote both her name and Ahsoka's name and a little note underneath it for your daughter. So I thought that was pretty cool. And
yeah, she was super nice. I was really surprised she did that. So
I'm just happy that we got to shake their hands. Like that's literally all that I really wanted was just to get a chance to say one thing to them and shake their hand. And that's pretty much exactly what we got out of it. I mean, yeah, you know, made Hayden Christensen chuckle at something that I said, and how many people on earth can say they made Hayden Christensen laugh at something? So probably not too many. So I was very, very pleased with it.
Outside of his immediate family and close friends, I'm sure that it's a short list. So
yeah. And maybe you and McGregor once or twice.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah. But it was really, really cool. So obviously we met them Sunday, Saturday, you know, we walked the show floor, but Saturday they just had such a killer lineup of panels that I couldn't help but just hang around the main stage. The Strange New Worlds, obviously this is a Star Wars podcast, but you know, we're nerds of varied taste, and we also love Star Trek. And Strange New Worlds had a fantastic panel. Really, really good, hosted by Ensign Kim, or Garrett Wang, as you may know him from Voyager fame. So that was super fun, because I just love Strange New Worlds. So that was, and the cast just has such great chemistry with each other, and they seem like they're all just having so much fun,
yeah,
up there talking about it. And then, of course, you know, the capstone event was an evening with Rosario and Hayden, which we were lucky enough to get, you know, pretty excellent seats for. And it's just, you know, it was a little more than an hour long discussion of just between Rosario and Hayden, and man, they just talked all kinds of Star Wars stuff, and it's just so cool to hear them chat about the experience of being on Ahsoka together and how excited Hayden was to come back and you know, give being Anakin, give being Vader another shot.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a delight, and I appreciate it as well. You know, we got some good commentary from them on I think some pressing fan questions, the kind of things that people always wonder about, and that may or may not ever get an official answer. But I think it's been a fan theory for quite a while, but Hayden, I guess, has maybe picked up on it and gives some credence to it, at least, you know, his opinion. But there's the question of, you know, why did Anakin try to flip over Obi-Wan when Obi-Wan had the high ground, right? It's that eternal question, you know, just the arrogance of youth, just, you know, truly believing he was invincible. You know, what was it? And Hayden kind of talked about it being a little bit of all of that, but he also gave some credit to this theory that's been floating around, that it was kind of a callback to when Obi-Wan flipped over Maul and cut him in half. And that, you know, this was kind of one of those things that sort of, you know, maybe once in a generation, like Obi-Wan's exploits had kind of become legend, you know, like after his master was killed by this mysterious Sith, the first Sith that's been publicly acknowledged by the Jedi Order in 1,000 years,
mm-hmm.
And then defeated the Sith by flipping over his head. You know, what an insane thing to happen, right? And so this has probably become legend, and you know, Anakin's probably heard the story a million times, and so of course he wants to try to do something similar to Obi-Wan. You know, to prove that he truly is better than Obi-Wan, and does not, obviously, you know, we all know how it ends. So anyways, I just thought it was neat that, you know, he kind of, I don't think he would have brought that up if he hadn't given it some thought himself, you know, if it hadn't been maybe, yep, something he had considered, something he had seen, and thought, you know, that does fit, that kind of makes sense. So that was fun. I've already seen news articles popping up saying, talking about this, but yeah, we had, you know, some good kind of hinting, I think, from them that maybe we see a little more, possibly. No confirmation. They were very careful. They were consummate professionals. No confirmation we see more of Anakin in season 2 of Ahsoka, but he said he's very open to showing up. He said he'd love to do it, and gosh, he's right there, right? Like what they asked Rosario, how she would feel if, or how she would have felt if Anakin had been in the Obi-Wan series but not showed up in Ahsoka. She was like, would have been so upset. What'd she say? I think she said that she would have been mad jealous.
Yeah.
She was like, he's right there. Just bring him in. And so I'm like, he's still right there. Like, you know, let's do a little more.
It's pretty awesome to hear them talk, because they're both clearly such fans of the material, like outside of their roles as well. But it was just a really cool, really wonderful experience. Made me hungry to do more of that type of stuff, you know, on a more regular cadence. I I don't know how I freaking missed Celebration when it was in Orlando. Like that's going to eat at me forever that we didn't end up going and doing that, because
yeah.
And we're like, oh, you know, we'll do the next one when it's in Anaheim. And then it's like, oh, just kidding. It's in Japan. So significantly less easy to get to. And they only do it like every other year. So it's going to be a while before we have that opportunity again. But I'm definitely going to keep an eye out for some stuff that's more local to me. Not that I didn't enjoy traveling out to San Antonio, but that does make it a little bit more difficult for me as opposed to something that's like drivable. You know, or at least potentially less halfway across the country.
It is my turn to come to Florida, I think, you know.
Yeah. So it was great. We also there was a nice little panel with Amon Asfandi and Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who play Ezra and Hera from Ahsoka as well. And so that was quite delightful. Amon was less careful about stuff that he was saying, and so they let slip something. I think they asked him, you know, who do you think is the better droid, Chopper or R2? And of course both of them said Chopper,
right?
But Amon was like, yeah, I mean, we got to go back to work with that guy soon, like we can't talk shit about him. And Mary Elizabeth Winstead literally like slapped his arm. I was like, what? Like, you can't, don't say that. So you know, there's a good chance that Ezra and Hera and Chopper are going to be coming back at some point.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I think he did credit, you know, by body count alone that Chopper would win in a fight, like with all respect to R2.
He acknowledged the Chopper as a war criminal.
Yeah, he did. You know, yeah. He did say those words exactly. It's good to know that everybody knows the truth about Chopper, and we all love him anyways.
Yeah, I thought it was, I don't know, I just thought it was really cool how plugged in all the Star Wars, you know, actors were,
yeah,
to the community, kind of like, you know, Ewan talked for at length about the memes that have been made, you know, from the prequels. And it was honestly, it was really interesting, and in a way sad and in a way happy to hear him talk, because he said that like when he finished with the prequels, he just wanted to be done with them at that point. He said, you know, the only voices they were hearing at that point in time were the critics' voices.
Right.
And the critics were not super kind to the prequels. And you know, a lot of the critics were people who grew up with the original trilogy. And he said he felt like these people watched these movies when they were kids, and then they went to the theater and they wanted to have the same experience they had, but they're 30 years older. And he's like, that's just not what happens. And so he's like, the only voices we heard were these adults and these critics that just were not kind to the movies. And he said at the end, he just wanted to put them behind him and like move on with his life. And it wasn't until, you know, years later and the internet had grown, and a lot of kids who grew up with the prequels as their introduction to Star Wars or as their formative Star Wars experience started talking more about it. And he said all of a sudden all the voices that were talking about the prequels weren't talking about how much they hated it. They were talking about how much they loved it,
yeah,
and how fun they thought the movies were. And he said it completely changed the way he thought about the prequels, and it made him so much more excited. He said he was actually more excited to revisit Obi-Wan in the Kenobi show than he was when he got cast as Obi-Wan the first time in the prequels. He was like, seeing that robe and that outfit and that costume again for Kenobi, you know, hit him harder than it ever hit him the first time, because he knew that he was back and he was doing this for people that loved, you know, that loved his portrayal of the character from before. And man, he was vehement that he wanted a season two of Kenobi,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah. I would say, you know, if anyone ever gets the chance to go and hear him talk, I would highly recommend it. He is an excellent storyteller. He's very animated. He had to unentangle himself from a cord and get out from behind the table so he could get up to like pantomime a scene, you know, from reshoots where he and Hayden had been like spinning on these discs. And who was it that came to this?
Robert De Niro.
Robert De Niro. That's right. And, you know, Robert De Niro was visiting the set and he was just like so embarrassed that they were standing on these metal discs being spun around by crew members. And it was just so fun to watch him tell that story and to hear him speak about his experience and the way that his attitude has changed because people have shown, you know, their appreciation for prequels. Yeah, it was moving. It was exciting. I don't know that I had lost any love for Star Wars, but I almost feel like I came out of SpaceCon with more excitement to spend more time in the Star Wars universe.
I certainly did. And part of it is, and like, this was, you know, every once in a while you have like a faith in humanity restored moment. And this was like a faith in the Star Wars fandom restored moment, because like, you know, if you are online too much, which I think all of us are guilty of being sometimes, yeah, right? Like, you can forget that there are a lot of people out there who like just enjoy things, because so much of the online fandom is tinted with negativity and, you know, hate mongering from, you know, YouTube people, and even from people who are just like, you know, quote tweeting YouTube people. And we went in there and like, you know, I enjoyed Kenobi enough. Like, I wish that some things had been done differently about Kenobi, but in the end, I really liked the show. I liked watching it. You know, I enjoyed a lot of the aspects that it brought. And if the biggest sin was that, like, you know, it was a little bit too long and it could have been edited down to like tell a more concise story, then like, that's a pretty small sin as far as things go. And like Ahsoka, I love Ahsoka, especially now that I've taken it to like, now when I do the rewatches, I rewatch it like two movies. I absolutely love it. I think it's fantastic. I think it's going to be one of those things like the Clone Wars that, you know, the Clone Wars came out and people are like, oh yeah, it's pretty good. But then in retrospect, now you look at the Clone Wars and you're like, it's a masterpiece, right? I think Ahsoka, when more of the story has been told, people are going to look back on it and be like, it's a masterpiece. I really think that. But if you just listen to what Twitter has to say, or you just listen to what YouTube has to say, it's easy to think that like Ahsoka was a failure, that people hated it or something. But then you go to this convention and you see Rosario there and you see Hayden there, you know, and the MCs, the master ceremonies there are like, you know, and who here loves Ahsoka? And just the entire crowd goes wild. And right, you know, who here's like us, you know, people are like saying Ahsoka, they thought it was like, it's their favorite TV show and all this stuff. Like, there's so much love for not just for the actors and for the characters, but for like the shows themselves, that you're just like, wow, I forgot that there are legitimately people who just like love this stuff. And I walked out of it like, it was so much more of a positive experience than what my day-to-day experience is reading Star Wars Twitter, and which is just like constant feuds and fighting and arguing, and this is better than this, or I don't like this because of this. Then you go to the Space Con and like, everyone's just like, oh my God, I loved Ahsoka. It was the greatest thing ever. Oh, I loved Kenobi. It was so much fun. Like, it's just like this pure, unfiltered enjoyment and appreciation for the franchise that I just feel like you don't get online.
Yeah.
Because these people care so deeply about it that they're willing to spend money and take time out of their day to go to this place and to do this thing that, you know, not everyone who was there lived in San Antonio. Some people like myself traveled for it, right? But like on Twitter, you know, Twitter's free and you can tweet while you're taking a dump on the toilet, right? Like, there's no effort that's taken. So every single person gets to voice their opinion. But here at this place, it was only the people who just really, really care the most that were there. And so it was like, it's self-selected into like the most optimistic and happy part of the fandom that wanted to be there. And it just, yeah, like you said, I just left like feeling rejuvenated.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, and that, the panel hall, it wasn't packed for every panel, but it was for, I'd say 8 out of 10 of these Star Wars panels, it was jammed full with people standing along the sides to watch them. And, it was, there were a lot of people there. It's a pretty big hall. It was really kind of a wild experience, just kind of being in that crowd and just realizing like, boy, everybody sitting around me enjoyed this show at least as much as I did, maybe more.
Mm-hmm.
One of the panels, you missed this one Sunday morning, but I went and listened to Matthew Wood, who's the voice of Grievous, who actually was a sound engineer on the prequel trilogy before he became the voice of Grievous, and after he became the voice of Grievous, incidentally, and also on the Clone Wars. He was doing sound work and voicing Grievous and voicing battle droids. And he sort of stumbled into it. It's really kind of a fun story. Matthew Wood got started in Lucasfilm because when he was a high schooler, he knew how to use a fax machine. This was a long time ago. Fax machines were new. But he decided, he wanted to, he had heard that there might be some new Star Wars movies, right? And he figured out where roughly they, George Lucas had like Skywalker Ranch and had everything set up. And so the internet was real young, but there were these bulletin boards, and he saw a posting for a tester on a bulletin board. And so he faxed his resume as a high schooler to this job that was an anonymous job posting. He had no idea for what company it was. And they called him and they were like, "Did you fax your resume?" He was like, "Yeah." Like, no one's ever done that before. And long story short, he got a job at Lucasfilm, auditioned anonymously for the voice of Grievous because he was panicking that George wasn't going to pick any of the voice actors. They had auditioned like 50 people, and George wasn't happy with any of them. But he had been sitting there listening to George critique every single one of these voice actors. And so he just took all of these hours of criticism and worked out what he thought George wanted and then delivered it. And here we are. Years later, he's editing the sound for the Clone Wars animated series. And he's like, I think that the battle droids could be funnier. And so he starts voicing little like one-liners for them. And then he tells Dave Filoni that he's added in some one-liners. And Dave's like, don't even tell me where you put them or what you said. Just show me the episode with your little jokes added in. And if they make me laugh, they can stay. And they stayed. And so a lot of those little one-liners, where the battle droids are like, "But I just got promoted." Matthew Wood, that we have to thank for all of that. This was an amazing talk.
I could not believe how long the line was for Matthew Wood to sign stuff. Like we walked over.
People were going insane for him. It was wild.
Yeah. Into the part of the convention center where just the signings and like photo opportunities were set up. And we were just, looking around because our signings weren't until Sunday. But on Saturday, we were just looking around at who else was there. And, they had like LeVar Burton was there and Micah Burton and just like a bunch of different people. But the line for Matthew Wood to get signatures was so unbelievably long. It was rivaling literally the longest lines that I saw for any of the celebrities that are in there. And like, they had some other celebrities. They had a bunch of people from, what was it, from one of your shows that you like, Stargate, I think. I don't know.
Yeah, they had a lot of the main cast of
Stargate, but yeah.
There were a few spin-offs, but it was, they had a bunch of folks from Stargate SG-1, which is the original show, including some people who were in the movie as well. So that was pretty cool. I did not know anybody from Stargate was going to be there at all, but they had a pretty good showing and actually quite a few cosplayers walking around with staff weapons and their SG unit military uniforms on. So it was kind of fun. Mm-hmm. That was a very entertaining panel. But back to Matthew Wood for a second.
It was just, it was impressive, man. Like people love him. And I thought I was like, God, Matthew Wood, like I know who he is, but I feel like the casual Star Wars fans don't know who he is. But apparently I was very wrong because every single time we walked past him, he had like the line like three times folded around of people just like waiting to, I guess, shake his hand and give him to sign battle droid models or Grievous models or whatever it was. So,
yeah, they may never have been, like main characters, but, Grievous is a really fun villain, a very unique villain. And the battle droids add so much color. They're the stormtroopers and scout troopers of their era. And they're just so much fun. So I can see it. I guess I did see it. But yeah, there were a lot of folks there. I know you saw Giancarlo Esposito do a panel. We watched Katie Sackhoff talk about Bo-Katan. Ahmad Best had a panel that we unfortunately had to miss for autograph reasons. But he stayed pretty busy as well from what I saw. So.
Yeah, Ahmad Best was very popular, which was nice to see. Katie Sackhoff was there, you know, honestly. Her panel was less about her representing Bo-Katan and more about her Battlestar Galactica time, which I don't know enough about Battlestar Galactica. I know that some of the people from Star Trek, like Ronald D. Moore, went over to that. And I believe that ILM did some of the special effects for them as well. But like I don't know enough about that series, to be honest. But listening to Katie Sackhoff talk about it actually kind of got me interested in it. So. You know, I don't know that I'm going to have time to you know, actually watch the entire series, but it seemed pretty cool. And there were a lot of questions about that, you know, so she was representing Battlestar pretty well.
I will say if you watch season one of Battlestar Galactica, either you're going to get to the end of the season and immediately start the next one, or you're not probably going to finish the season. Like, it's going to be one of those two. I feel like it either pulls you in and you're like, yes, this show is for me. Or you're just like, no, why did you recommend this? So I really enjoyed the heck out of that series. And I guess we came away with a couple of new viewing recommendations for you. I'm hoping to maybe get you to watch some Stargate. And maybe we can chat about that in the future. Another fun show for the sci-fi nerds.
Apparently there's a lot of them out there. I didn't realize, I mean, it was SpaceCon, right? But you've got Star Wars, Star Trek, Stargate, Battlestar, right? Like all the star-flavored things. So,
should have called it StarCon, I guess.
Yeah. Overall, I was very pleased with it, though, and I definitely look forward to going to another convention sometime here in the near future. And then we got back, and we were blessed earlier this week with a new Star Wars trailer for Skeleton Crew.
Yeah.
And this Star Wars trailer has a couple of firsts in it. It sets a very unique tone when compared to other Star Wars content. Number one, I think it's the first time, at least in my memory, that we've ever heard licensed music in a Star Wars trailer. Star Wars has always, like, they don't do any licensed music at all. It's always, you know, original scores for their content. And this time we get like an Ourobesh version of Major Tom, I guess is what it is, which I didn't even catch. Like, I guess I kind of recognized the theme, but I didn't realize it was that until someone in our Discord said so.
Yeah, I mean, it's a recognizable song, but from a certain era. You know, I don't think it's super recognizable to certainly not anybody under 30 at this current moment in time when this episode's coming out. And probably not a lot of people under 40 even. I happen to grow up on a lot of late 70s and 80s music because that's what my parents listened to. And so this was pretty recognizable for me, but I can't blame you for not picking up on it because they did disguise it. You know, they changed the words and... Yeah, it's a fun song, though, and it's a heck of a fun trailer. Like, I came out of that trailer and I was just like, just take my money, you know? Like, this is how you continue to guarantee my subscriptions, Disney. Like, more of this, please.
You know, we're in an era now where number one, like the Goonies and Star Wars vibes that it gives off are real, which of course we know, you know, from having listened to interviews with the creators, like that's what they're going for.
Yeah. Right?
I'm totally sold. I'm 100% on board with that idea already. The trailer made it look phenomenal. The one thing that stands out is like the mixture of like suburbia and space type thing that we've never seen in Star Wars before. So I'm pretty excited about that because that's super unique. We started to see a little bit of it in Andor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where like we see how Cyril lives and he just like lives in an apartment with his mom. And you're like, wow, that's really weird. Like, you never think about how just like normal people live in Star Wars.
We're always following Jedi or soldiers, you know, or rebels.
But I like that a lot. And I thought it was really interesting. So I'm looking forward to that. But then also, like, just these like weird semi-vintage, like 80s, 90s suburbia vibes that it gives off. Are like right up my alley, because I'm a huge fan of Stranger Things too. And obviously, like, I don't expect this to go the horror route like Stranger Things does, but it kind of gave me those like Stranger Things-esque vibes, where like you've got a squad of kids that are all friends that like discover something, and in Stranger Things, of course, it ends up being horrendous and the Upside Down, and it's all awful. And this, it's just like, you know, a spaceship that's buried, but there's like skeletons in it and pirates and gold, and like I thought Jude Law, we've seen almost nothing of Jude Law in this role up until this point. He was actually featured pretty prominently in the trailer, which was good. And I'm excited to see what he does with the role. But also, the animation, like the CGI for this is incredible. I don't know why it looks so amazingly good, but it really does look like movie caliber CGI that they've done for this TV show. And so, you know, I think Katie Sackhoff actually had a quote in her thing that was basically like, expectations are the killer of joy, right? Because, you know, you set expectations for yourself and stuff can't always live up to your expectations. So I'm trying to keep it in check. But my only expectation is that I think I'm going to have fun with the show. And I'm quite looking forward to it.
Yeah, they always cherry pick stuff for the trailers, but the visuals that we got have me pretty excited. They are just some absolutely gorgeous shots. You know, clearly taken from, I think, a range of episodes in the show, and, you know, yeah, hitting the Goonies vibes. Not just the, you know, the CGI and the digital effects, but the practical effects in the show, I think, are just beautifully crafted. Everything just feels so perfectly Star Wars. It feels like this could have come out in the 80s, except with, you know, far better CGI. And that, I think, hits much closer to the classic look and feel of Star Wars. It tickles those nostalgia bones and kind of puts me right back into, you know, some of those feelings of, you know, watching Star Wars as a kid. And so I'm very excited for this one as well. You know, Hype is dangerous. Hype can lead to the dark side.
Hype is the mind killer.
Yes, hype is the mind killer. But I am hoping that it will not bring total obliteration, and that we can just relax and enjoy this.
It's just a really good trailer. It really is. Like I was rewatching it before this, and like it just looks fun. It looks good. I don't know if Hondo is going to show up. But they said space pirates enough times in the trailer to where I'm like,
I'm trying not to hope.
Come on, guys. We have a space pirate just sitting there waiting for us.
Obviously, the first thing that comes to my mind when I heard them say space pirates for like the second or third time, and I was just like, please let this be Hondo's lost treasure. Like, just give us his voice, you know, some lost messages from Hondo. Leading you on a treasure hunt. That would be something. But I'm not going to hope for that. It's probably not that. So, anyways, very exciting. And I think that maybe brings us to the end of the pre-show. Here, 40 minutes in. Do we need to mention any housekeeping before we switch tax here?
I do not believe we do have anything else we need to mention. I think we are pretty much just good to go and jump into the discussion. It's funny that we were talking about Hondo, because Hondo is he doesn't feature in this first episode, but we will be talking about him before we finish up with this arc. Interestingly. So I'd actually completely, I hadn't forgotten this arc. I obviously remember it. The scene that I remember the most from this arc is the booby trap in R2 Come Home in the second episode, where Jango Fett's helmet is left sitting in the, you know, the wrecked Venator, right? And like that's what I remember the most from all three of these episodes. I honestly didn't remember a ton about this first episode, and I was pleasantly surprised by how good it was. Obviously, they bring Daniel Logan back. Daniel Logan was the actor who played young Boba Fett in the prequels, and so they brought him back to do the voice of all the clone cadets, the young ones. And then we get Aura Sing, and we get Bosk in this too. So we're starting to accumulate like the rogues gallery along with the rest of the bounty hunters, and Aura Sing is wonderfully played in these episodes by Jamie King. I was really, really impressed with how good of a character Aura Sing ends up being. And, you know, even Dave Filoni points out in the featurette that, like, you know, she has layers to her where she doesn't reveal quite how far she's willing to go until she has to go that far. And so you could almost at the beginning think that, like, oh, she's just like Boba's caretaker. And then as the episode progresses, you realize more and more that, like, oh, no, she's using Boba to do something, you know, that doesn't even border on evil. That just is evil now. And what's funny to me is I was reminded when I was watching this episode how a lot of people were like, oh, man, Robert Rodriguez's Book of Boba Fett ruined Boba's character. He went from a merciless, you know, bounty hunter to this like soft, honorable ruler. And it's like, no, that's what Boba's character was the entire time, according to the Clone Wars canon that we got. Like, they go out of their way to make it obvious that Boba is not an evil person in the Clone Wars, that he is willing to do things, and he's especially willing to hurt people who he thinks have wronged him, right? Or who he thinks are evil. But he himself is not a ruthless murderer, right? He's not that. And even Hondo says to Boba in this, you know, your father Jango was an honorable man. You know, he was a good friend and an honorable man. And so they're humanizing these bounty hunters on this one side, and they go out of their way to differentiate Boba from Aura, and like Aura is evil, right? And Boba is not. And they draw that line between the two of them. And that's what, you know, reminded me that everybody was upset about Book of Boba Fett making Boba, you know, not ruthless. And it's like, well, it's kind of how he's been the whole time if you've been watching the Clone Wars.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's kind of a reminder that the Boba Fett that we get in Book of Boba Fett is the Clone Wars Boba Fett. He is not the Legends Boba Fett. They are two distinct individuals. And they are quite different from each other. So.
Yeah, so I guess we should start off at the beginning. This is Death Trap. Again, it is only the first part in a three-part episode. Basically, Boba Fett has infiltrated a clone cadet like training field trip, so to speak, to go onto the Venator that currently houses Anakin Skywalker and Mace Windu. An unlikely couple if I've ever seen one, but they are paired off or whatever this mission is, along with Admiral Killian, who is just absolutely the most Scottish of all the admirals. I'm surprised he's not wearing a kilt when he's out there doing this stuff. But Boba is trying to assassinate Mace Windu. He wants to seek revenge for him murdering his father in Attack of the Clones in episode 2 of the prequels. So he has disguised himself as a clone cadet Lucky. And there's like a, you know, a brief little bit of friction at the beginning, where some of the other clone cadets don't take kindly to him being there, him being a new transfer, so to speak. But another clone cadet stands up for him. Jax is the name of the one who stands up for him. And I mean, I I had an okay time with all this like clone cadet banter and stuff that was going on. The idea of a clone field trip to a Venator that's in an active war zone kind of tickled me a little bit. And I was like, that seems like certainly one way to introduce them to, you know, the rigors of combat life. I just thought it was funny. But I also really appreciated the, they have like a clone, like teacher, so to speak, who's like taking them around on this field trip. Who's got like the stereotypical like samurai haircut, like bald on top. And I think he actually has like a Japanese flag as his insignia on his arm as well. I want to say his name is like Charger or something. But I thought that was quite funny.
Yeah, he definitely had some sensei vibes going on. I will say it's been a while since I've seen this episode, and it doesn't open. It has an intriguing opening because it does sort of set up, okay, this pretty obviously this is Boba. And at least obviously to us, the audience, not to anybody in the episode. But yeah, then we get kind of bogged down into these, this back and forth with these chronologically 6-year-old clones, you know, giving each other a hard time. And I have to admit that for a couple of minutes, I was just like, I don't really remember how this episode goes, but I hope that it's not a lot of this. A little bit to establish, you know, character and setting, I guess, is fine, but boy, I'm going to have trouble with this episode if this keeps going on. And luckily, they kind of move on pretty quickly. And we've got them being greeted then by Jedi generals Mace Windu and Anakin Skywalker. And, you know, they're very excited. The actual clone cadets are very excited for the opportunity to, you know, experience life on a ship alongside Jedi Knights, who they, you know, kind of regard as legends in many ways. You can see that, you can kind of hear that in the way that they talk about them. And Boba is visibly pissed off, but nobody notices. So I guess it all works out.
Yeah, they have an interesting little scene where they allow the clone cadets to kind of train on one of the gunnery stations. They have a clone who like fires what effectively are like these skeet, explosive skeet things out. And the first two clone cadets just miss their shots completely. And Boba's got like a weird look in his eye. So Killian calls him up and is like, why don't you sit down? And Boba blasts the first thing is skeet out. And he's like, the clone says, oh, he just got lucky. Let me fire, a different pattern. He shoots three of them at once, and Boba shoots all three of them down. Because we know that Boba is obviously an unmodified, he's basically just a perfect clone of Jango Fett. So they're all pretty impressed. And Killian in particular expresses some admiration for his talents before sending them off to continue their tour of the ship. But Boba slinks away from the rest of the group and kind of like lies his way into Mace Windu's quarters. There are a couple of brief things where like the clones, kind of stop him and ask what he's doing. But the clones are blinded by the fact that Boba looks just like them. And so they just assume that he's lost and they point him in the correct direction, which I thought was funny, sending him towards Mace Windu's of quarters. But what he's really there to do is to plant a bomb. And he comes very, very close to potentially actually killing Mace. Mace is about to walk into his office when he gets called up to the bridge. And the clone is insistent that Anakin needs him right now, so he actually has to go. So he lets the clone drop the stuff off in his office. And unfortunately, the clone is the one that triggers the bomb, and the clone is killed. I was actually surprised how much care Mace Windu showed for this clone. He picks the clone up, he levitates him behind the blast doors, he checks him to see if he's injured. Unfortunately, he is deceased, but, sometimes I think of Mace Windu as like the least likely of the Jedi generals to care about the clones at all, or right. about droids or anything like that, given just his normal demeanor.
Yeah, he definitely has a... Not the friendliest aspect when he's just walking around, but you know, it's clear that there is some of that Jedi compassion, or at the very least concern for the well-being of his soldiers. You know, it is there and does remind us, you know, Mace is one of the good guys. He is a Jedi and he is trying to do the right thing. And yeah, Boba gets super close to killing him here. I have to think if Mace was actually going to walk in that he would have, you know, had some sort of warning from the Force that would have alerted him and allowed him to evade death, although perhaps not injury.
Well, you would think that, but Anakin picked up a helmet that had a bomb in it in the second episode of this series. And I think Mace does get some sense that something is incorrect, but Anakin had no idea and just like, you know, would have killed himself if Mace hadn't, you know, hadn't noticed it. But
yeah.
So they realize, you know, Boba realizes that his plan has failed. So he calls Aura up and he's like, well, what do I do now? And she's like, oh, well, it's easy. You just blow up the entire ship. You know, you just sabotage the reactor. The reactor will blow. Either the ship will explode or the ship will crash. Either way, you know, you'll get what you want. And he's like, well, what about the crew and all the innocents? And she's like, look, you want to kill this Jedi, right? Everyone else is disposable. Like, do what you have to do. And so Boba, you know, he goes along with it. He's like, you know what? Fine. If that's what I have to do, then I'll do it. And so he sneaks off again and heads down to the reactor core. Some poor trooper notices him there and is like, oh, once again, he's like, oh, you know, you what are you doing here? You must be lost. Like, you must have gotten separated from your group. And Boba kind of disarms him voluntarily by being like, oh man, is that a DC-15A blaster? Wikipedia was quick to point out that it was in fact a DC-15S blaster, which at the time was part of the extended universe.
Yeah.
But that was made into Legends, so it is no longer a continuity error. Which I thought was quite funny. But yeah, the clone trooper just foolishly is like, oh yeah, man, here, keep the safety on, kid. Like, just, you know, yeah. Take a look at it. I know you're impressed with it. Then of course Boba beats him over the head and then stuns him with it.
Yeah. The trooper does fight back, right? You know, they're not totally helpless, does knock Boba down, but Boba still has the blaster, and that's, you know, he only stuns him. So, you know, it's clear Boba's not excited about the idea of killing the clones. Whether there's, you know, some confusing feelings there because they all look just like his dad, or just because he sees them as innocents, maybe a little bit of both, hard to say. He doesn't delve that deep into his emotions. There's no therapy session here, but he does, despite the fact that he's planning to blow up the ship, he only stuns the clone. And that does, you know, give us a hint here that Boba, you know, retains some humanity, which, as you noted before, is important for understanding the character over the course of, you know, quite a long portrayal of him in current Star Wars canon. Let's see.
Yeah, so, I mean, he sabotages the core. The core explodes.
Yes,
causes massive explosion, actually.
Yep.
Breaches the hull of the Endurance. Sucks out one poor clone trooper who gives out the Wilhelm scream as it gets dragged out into space.
Yeah. Gotta get one in there.
And they realize that like the damage is basically too severe, that the Endurance is critically damaged. It's not going to be able to escape the gravitational pull of the nearby planet Vankor, which they're on. And so, you know, they're ordered to abandon ship. And so they board everyone to the escape pods. Admiral Killian stubbornly refuses. He's like, nope, but Admiral has to go down with the ship. And the Jedi are like, you know, we could order you. And he's like, I don't give a crap what you're ordering me. He's like, I'm not going to do it. He's like, it's an admiral's job to go down with the ship. If the ship's going down, then I'm going down with it. And, you know, hopefully I survive. But his command crew valiantly offers to stay along with him, along with Commander Pons. Commander Pons is the Rex to Mace Windu, actually. That's what his role is. And Pons actually has quite a storied career prior to this. He actually shows up in Attack of the Clones. He's in that, although he's in a different colored armor at that point in time. And then he's in several other arcs up until this point. He's in the Ryloth arc. He shows up in the Zillowbeast arc and the stuff on Malastare. And then he shows up here. So Pons is not exactly a no-name clone commander, but he is definitely not Wolf or Rex or, you know, any of those other ones. But he's pretty high up there in terms of named clones. And so he also volunteers to stay alongside Killian. But Boba and the other young cadets are jettisoned out in an escape pod.
Yeah, and Boba, as you might expect, has a plan here. This is part of his plan to get back, to connect back up with the bounty hunters, was pretty clearly to use one of these escape pods. So he sabotages the pod in some way, causing it to veer off course away from all of the other pods. And the other young clones are concerned that they are lost and won't be found, but they are actually found quite quickly by the Slave One. And the doors to the pod open to reveal not the rescue that they were hoping for, but Aura Sing and Bosk, two of our bounty hunters who we'll be seeing quite a bit of. And Aura, you know, very quickly makes clear to these young clones that Boba was behind everything that's happened to them, including the destruction of the ship, the deaths of, you know, anybody who died in the course of these events. And she's ready to just execute these young clones. They're witnesses, they're trouble. They don't need them for anything. They're not valuable as, you know, prisoners or hostages in her eyes. And so she's like, just kill them. Bob was like, well, that's not part of the plan. And ultimately, however, he decides to go with Aura Sing and Bosk and to leave them floating in the escape pod to either be found or die in space. And they, you know, definitely aren't feeling like they're going to get rescued. However, the Slave One departs with the bounty hunters, and mere seconds later, Anakin and Mace arrive in another ship to find the cadets unharmed. And then, meanwhile, we've got Admiral Killian just determinedly trying to land the Endurance, despite all of its damage, on the surface of that nearby planet. So we'll find out if he's as good at landing half a ship as Anakin is. But I think that's where we leave him.
Yeah. So some interesting stuff. I really actually liked the music that they played in the background when Slave One like detaches from the escape pod. There's like a very eerie, like very dramatic musical sting that plays that made me think that maybe this is going to be a little bit darker than it actually ended up being. You know, I thought maybe Slave One was going to turn around and just blast the escape pod out of the sky, but I think killing children is probably where they draw the line.
That'd be something.
And not in Star Wars, because obviously Anakin kills a number of children, but specifically in Clone Wars, I think maybe they try to avoid that. But Aura Sing, I'd like to talk about her for just a second. So she came about in the Phantom Menace, right? She's at the Bounty Eve Classic. She's hanging out with the Hutts in the celebrity box. But she came from a concept art that was called Babe Fett, was originally what she was supposed to be. And they have really fleshed out her character in current canon. She actually used to be a Jedi, or I don't think she ever actually became a Jedi, but she was inducted into the Jedi Order when she was young. And she ended up leaving to become a bounty hunter. So probably quite fortunate for the Jedi that she only became a bounty hunter, given how really truly evil she is. Probably quite lucky that she only became a bounty hunter and she didn't become like an Asajj Ventress type person. But yeah, she was force sensitive. She is a Paladuvian. And she actually had a lightsaber at one point in time, took it with her. I don't know where it is at this point. This is all fleshed out, of course, you know, chronologically before the Clone Wars in a series of comics. I believe it's actually the early Darth Maul comics. But yeah, so I thought that was pretty interesting. And little known fact, the person who kills her is Tobias Beckett, played by Woody Harrelson in the Solo movies. It's pointed out multiple times. I think Dryden Voss points it out and Lando Calrissian points it out, like, oh, you're the one who killed Aura Sing. And, you know, his comeback to that as well. You know, he's like, I just pushed her. I'm pretty sure it was the fall that killed her. So.
Oh, man, I had forgotten that.
Mm-hmm.
That's quite the deep dive there. There's also a fun connection to Dark Disciple. I think she, along with the rest of the Krayt's Claw, Kate, which is the bounty hunting syndicate that Boba Fett forms down the road, and Bosk is also involved. Go to rescue Keenlyn Voss when he is captured and held prisoner on Sereno. So I think she participates in that. I'm not 100% sure if she goes. I know Boss goes. Bosk's full name is Bosk Wasak Kradosk, which I'm guessing roughly translates to Bosk, son of Kradosk. Kradosk was his dad. So there you go. We've learned a little Trandoshan today, and we've learned all about Aura Sing, which is fun. Yeah, I think that's kind of it for Death Trap. There's not a whole lot of trivia outside of, you know, deep dives on some of the characters who we're introduced to here. All in all, it's a pretty solid episode. It feels like it goes by really quickly to me, which I think is a good sign.
Mm-hmm.
It feels a little different than a lot of episodes because it's not focused on one of our typical mainline story characters. And I think this might be one of the few Clone Wars episodes. There are several, but it's definitely a strong minority that follows what's essentially a villain character as the main character of the episode. And that kind of makes it both unique and kind of a fun change of pace. It really breaks up the storytelling and it takes us in a different direction, which is nice. This is, after all, the season of the bounty hunters. So why shouldn't we follow young Boba? He takes his first steps into a much wider universe.
You know, unfortunately, one of the canceled storylines was a Boba Fett versus Cad Bane storyline that was supposed to be in season 6. Would have really enjoyed that. You know, there was a great question in the Discord, which is like, you know, if they were to greenlight Ewan McGregor coming back and Hayden Christensen coming back, what would you have them to do? And I'm like, honest to God, man, just do the storylines from Clone Wars that didn't get done. Yeah. I mean, there's an entire, it is easily a full season. You might be able to get away with more than a full season of Clone Wars storylines that actually are good storylines, because almost all of that content got made in one way or the other. You know, 8 episodes became Dark Disciple, the novel, which is a fantastic novel. We've talked about it a million times. Some of it became the Darth Maul comics. You know, some of it, the 4 of the arcs just got like released in their unfinished state. Like they're all previs, you know, animations and stuff like that, but the voice work was done. They just got released. You know, it's like some of them eventually became season 7 of Clone Wars, but there's so much good Clone Wars stuff. And yeah. I would love to see, even if it's only 2 or 3 of those, picked out and done in live action. It would be incredible. And like, I'm a sucker for that. Like, I don't think you need to reinvent the wheel, man. There's some good Star Wars stories. All that stuff is effectively canon. Like it was canonized when they talked about it and they said like this stuff happened. We just haven't been able to show it to you yet. Well, now's the time to show it to you. I don't think you need to come up with a whole brand new story. I would love to see that type of stuff. So.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and if you focus on maybe filling in some gaps toward the end of the Clone Wars, you know, given, you know, where Kenobi falls in the timeline, the end of the Clone Wars doesn't put them that much younger than they appear. So, you know, we have to do some de-aging. Yeah, we do, you know, but that's where that that's where those Disney dollars come in.
I did think it was pretty funny that maybe Ewan was the one who said it, but he was like, yeah, that de-aging is expensive.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, they'd have to
they'd have to do something about this face.
Yeah. He's like, that's expensive, though. So I'd still love to see it, though. I mean, this episode in general, like I like the Boba angle that they're taking. I like Aura Singh. I like Bossk. I like the bounty hunters in general, seeing them.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting getting a Mace Windu heavy episode, because I think Mace is an interesting character. I didn't really have any. I didn't have a ton of problems with this episode at all. Like you, I was not 100% on board with the like bickering clone cadets type angle they took early on, but they moved past that very quickly, and they only just vaguely revisited at the end when they're stuck in the escape pod, and then it felt pretty justified as far as it goes. So
it did, yeah. And it felt like they had done it at the beginning to set up some of the back and forth at the end. Nonetheless, you know, the other clone cadets were, for me, by and large, the weakest part of the episode. This is a tough one for me to rate. I didn't dislike it. We're introduced to a lot of characters that I really enjoy more later in the series, but it feels like they make... I feel like if you just skipped this episode, this whole arc, for example, since you'd be skipping the beginning of it, and just watch the later episodes with them, like, I think they could work, but it's nice to have this backstory and this setup, because it does pay off with more screen time for a lot of these characters. So I'm almost upgrading it on the basis of the fact that I like these characters more as the show goes on. I don't know if I'm going to give it a 7.5 or an 8. Not going to do the quarter point. Just kind of torn. So that's kind of where I'm sitting right now.
Yeah, for me, it's probably a 7.5. I think it's a pretty average episode of Clone Wars.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Let's do it. I'm going to go that way as well.
Nothing I really hate. Just an episode of Clone Wars. I think that's where I land on it. So, yeah, I mean, overall, not bad. The next two episodes in the series, I think I like more than I like this one. I don't know about the second episode, but the third episode, I do. The third episode, I definitely like more. Is it because it has Hondo in it? Maybe. I'd go so far as to say probably. But, you know, that's the price we pay for greatness. Hondo is just a fantastic character, and he elevates every episode that he's in. So super excited, you know, to get to those sometime later next week. But I think until then, that's all I've got.
All right. Well, this has been another episode of Beneath Wind Suns. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for supporting us. Thanks to the listeners. Thanks to the patrons. May the force be with you.
And also with you.